Oration and Panegyric Addressed to Origen by St. Gregory Thaumaturgus. Part 4. 6. The Arts by which Origen studies to keep Gregory and his brother Athenodorus with him, although it was almost against their will. And the Love by which both are taken captive. Of Philosophy, the foundation of piety, with the view of giving himself, therefore, wholly to that subject. Gregory is willing to give up fatherland, parents, the pursuit of law, and every other discipline. Of the soul as the free principle. The nobler part does not desire to be united with the inferior, but the inferior with the nobler. And from the very first day of his receiving us, which day was in truth the first day to me, and the most precious of all days, if I may so speak, since then, for the first time, the true sun began to rise upon me. While we, like some wild creatures of the fields, or like fish or some sort of birds that had fallen into the toils or nets and were endeavoring to slip out again and escape, we were bent on leaving him and making off for Berytus or our native country. He studied by all means to associate us closely with him, contriving all kinds of arguments and putting every rope in motion, as the proverb goes, and bringing all his powers to bear on that object. With that intent, he lauded the lovers of philosophy with large laudations and many noble utterances, declaring that those only live a life truly worthy of reasonable creatures, who aim at living an upright life, and who seek to know first of all themselves what manner of persons they are, and then the things that are truly good, which man ought to strive after, and then the things that are really evil, from which man ought to flee. And then he reprehended ignorance, and all the ignorant, and there are many such, who like brute cattle are blind in mind, and have no understanding even of what they are, and are as far astray as though they were wholly void of reason, and neither know themselves what is good and what is evil, nor at all care to learn it from others, but toil feverishly in quest of wealth and glory and such honors as belong to the crowd, and bodily comforts, and go distraught about things like these, as if they were the real good, and as though such objects were worth much, yea, worth all else. They prize the things themselves, and the arts by which they can acquire them, and the different lines of life which give scope for their attainment. The military profession, to wit, and the juridical, and the study of the laws. And with earnest and sagacious words, he told us that these are the objects that enervate us, when we despise that reason which ought to be the true master within us. I cannot recount at present all the addresses of this kind which he delivered to us, with the view of persuading us to take up the pursuit of philosophy. Nor was it only for a single day that he thus dealt with us, but for many days, and in fact as often as we were in the habit of going to him at the outset. And we were pierced by his argumentation as with an arrow from the very first occasion of our hearing him. For he was possessed of a rare combination of a certain sweet grace and persuasiveness, along with a strange power of constraint. Though we still wavered and debated the matter undecidedly with ourselves, holding so far by the pursuit of philosophy, without, however, being thoroughly brought over to it, while somehow or other we found ourselves quite unable to withdraw from it, conclusively, and thus were always drawn toward him by the power of his reasonings, as by the force of some superior necessity. for he asserted further that there could be no genuine piety toward the Lord of all in the man who despised this gift of philosophy, a gift which man alone, of all the creatures of the earth, has been deemed honorable and worthy enough to possess, and one which every man whatsoever, be he wise or be he ignorant, reasonably embraces, who has not utterly lost the power of thought by some mad distraction of mind. He asserted then, as I have said, that it was not possible for any one to be truly pious, to speak correctly, who did not philosophize. And thus he continued to do with us, until, by pouring in upon us many such argumentations, one after another, he at last carried us off fairly somehow or other, by a kind of divine power, like people with his reasonings, and established us in the practice of philosophy, and set us down, without the power of movement, as it were, beside himself, by his arts. Moreover, the stimulus of friendship was also brought to bear upon us, a stimulus indeed not easily withstood, but keen and most effective. The argument of a kind and affectionate disposition, which showed itself benignantly in his words, when he spoke to us and associated with us. For he did not aim merely at getting round us by any kind of reasoning, but his desire was, with a benignant and affectionate and most benevolent mind, to save us, and make us partakers in the blessings that flow from philosophy, and most especially also in those other gifts which the Deity has bestowed on him above most men, or, as we may perhaps say, above all men of our own time. I mean the power that teaches us piety, the word of salvation that comes to many and subdues to itself all whom it visits. For there is nothing that shall resist it, inasmuch as it is and shall be itself the king of all, although as yet it is hidden and is not recognized, whether with ease or with difficulty, by the common crowd, in such wise that when interrogated respecting it, they should be able to speak intelligently about it. And thus, like some spark lighting upon our inmost soul, love was kindled and burst into flame within us, a love at once to the Holy Word, the most lovely object of all, who attracts all irresistibly toward himself by his unutterable beauty, and to this man, his friend and advocate. And being most mightily smitten by this love, I was persuaded to give up all those objects or pursuits which seemed to us befitting, and among others, even my boasted jurisprudence. Yea, my very fatherland and friends, both those who were present with me then, and those from whom I had parted. And in my estimation there arose but one object dear and worth desire, to wit, philosophy. And that master of philosophy, this inspired man.
And the soul of Jonathan was knit with David. This word, indeed, I did not read till afterwards in the sacred scriptures, but I felt it before that time, not less clearly than it is written. For in truth it reached me then by the clearest of all revelations. For it was not simply Jonathan that was knit with David, but those things that were knit together, which are the ruling powers in man, their souls. Those objects which, even though all the things which are apparent and ostensible in man are severed, cannot by any skill be forced to a severance when they themselves are not willing. For the soul is free, and cannot be coerced by any means, not even though one should confine it and keep guard over it in some secret prison house. For wherever the intelligence is, there it is also of its own nature, and by the first reason. And if it seems to you to be in a kind of prison house, it is represented as there to you by a sort of second reason. But for all that, it is by no means precluded from subsisting anywhere according to its own determination. Nay, rather it is both able to be, and is reasonably believed to be, there alone and altogether, wheresoever and in connection with what things soever, those actions which are proper only to it are in operation. Wherefore, what I experienced has been most clearly declared in this very short statement, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. Objects which, as I said, cannot by any means be forced to a separation against their will, and which of their own inclination certainly will not readily choose it. Nor is it, in my opinion, in the inferior subject, who is changeful and very prone to vary in purpose, and in whom singly there has been no capacity of union at first, that the power of loosing the sacred bonds of this affection rests, but rather in the nobler one, who is constant and not readily shaken, and through whom it has been possible to tie these bonds and to fasten this sacred knot. Therefore it is not the soul of David that was knit by the divine word with the soul of Jonathan, but on the contrary, the soul of the latter, who was the inferior, who is said to be thus affected and knit with the soul of David. For the nobler object would not choose to be knit with one inferior, inasmuch as it is sufficient for itself. But the inferior object, as standing in need of the help which the nobler can give, ought properly to be knit with the nobler, and fitted dependently to it. So that this latter, retaining still its sufficiency in itself, might sustain no loss by its connection with the inferior, and that which is of itself without order, being now united and fitted harmoniously with the nobler, might, without any detriment done, be perfectly subdued to the nobler by the constraints of such bonds. Wherefore, to apply the bonds is the part of the superior and not the inferior. But to be knit to the other is the part of the inferior, and this too in such a manner that it shall possess no power of loosing itself from these bonds. And by a similar constraint, then, did this David of ours once gird us to himself, and he holds us now, and has held us ever since that time, so that even though we desired it, we could not loose ourselves from his bonds. And hence it follows that even though we were to depart, he would not release this soul of mine, which, as the Holy Scripture put it, he holds knit so closely with himself. 7. The wonderful skill with which Origen prepares Gregory and Athenodorus for philosophy. The intellect of each is exercised first in logic, and the mere attention to words is contemned. But after he had thus carried us captive at the very outset, and had shut us in, as it were, on all sides, and when what was best had been accomplished by him, and when it seemed good to us to remain with him for a time, then he took us in hand, as a skilled husbandman may take in hand some field unworked and altogether unfertile and sour and burnt up and hard as a rock and rough. Or, it may be, one not utterly barren or unproductive, but rather, perchance, by nature, very productive, though then waste and neglected and stiff and untractable with thorns and wild shrubs. Or, as a gardener may take in hand some plant which is wild indeed and which yields no cultivated fruits, though it may not be absolutely worthless, and on finding it thus, may, by his skill in gardening, bring some cultivated shoot and graft it in, by making a fissure in the middle, and then bringing the two together, and binding the one to the other until the sap in each shall flow in one direction. And then they shall both grow with the same nurture. For one may often see a tree of a mixed and worthless species thus rendered productive, in spite of its past barrenness, and made to rear the fruits of the good olive on wild roots. Or one may see a wild plant saved from being altogether profitless by the skill of a careful gardener. Or once more, one may see a plant which otherwise is one both of culture and of fruitfulness, but which, through the want of skilled attendance, has been left unpruned and unwatered and waste, and which is thus choked by the mass of superfluous shoots suffered to grow out of it at random, yet brought to discharge its proper function in germination, and made to bear the fruit whose production was formerly hindered by the superfluous growth. In such wise, then, and with such a disposition, did he receive us at first, and surveying us, as it were, with a husbandman's skill, and gauging us thoroughly, and not confining his notice to those things only which are patent to the eye of all, and which are looked upon in open light, but penetrating into us more deeply, and probing what is most inward in us, he put us to the question, and made propositions to us, and listened to us in our replies. And whenever he thereby detected anything in us not wholly fruitless and profitless and waste, he set about clearing the soil and turning it up and irrigating it and putting all things in movement, and brought his whole skill and care to bear upon us and wrought upon our mind. And thorns and thistles, and every kind of wild herb or plant which our mind so unregulated and precipitate in its own action, yielded and produced in its uncultured luxuriance and native wildness, he cut out and thoroughly removed by the processes of refutation and prohibition, sometimes assailing us in the genuine Socratic fashion, and again upsetting us by his argumentation whenever he saw us getting restive under him, like so many unbroken steeds, and springing out of the course and galloping madly about at random, until he, with a strange kind of persuasiveness and constraint, reduced us to a state of quietude under him by his discourse, which acted like a bridle in our mouth. And that was at first an unpleasant position for us, and one not without pain, as he dealt with persons who were unused to it, and still all untrained to submit to reason when he plied us with his argumentations. And yet he purged us by them. And when he had made us adaptable, and had prepared us successfully for the reception of the words of truth, then further, as though we were now a soil well wrought and soft and ready to impart growth to the seeds cast into it, he dealt liberally with us and sowed the good seed in season and attended to all the other cares of the good husbandry each in its own proper season. And whenever he perceived any element of infirmity or baseness in our mind, whether it was of that character by nature, or had become thus gross through the excessive nurture of the body, he pricked it with his discourses, and reduced it by those delicate words and turns of reasoning which, although at first the very simplest, are gradually evolved one after the other and skillfully wrought out until they advance to a sort of complexity which can scarce be mastered or unfolded, and which cause us to start up, as it were, out of sleep, and teach us the art of holding always by what is immediately before one, without ever making any slip by reason either of length or of subtlety. And if there was in us anything of an injudicious and precipitate tendency, whether in the way of assenting to all that came across us, of whatever character the objects might be, and even though they proved false, or whether in the way of often withstanding other things, even though they were spoken truthfully, that too he brought under discipline in us by those delicate reasonings already mentioned, and by others of like kind. For this branch of philosophy is of varied form. And he accustomed us not to throw in our testimony at one time, and again to refuse it, just at random and as chance impelled, but to give it only after careful examination, not only into things manifest, but also into those that are secret. For many things which are in high repute of themselves, and honorable in appearance, have found entrance through fair words into our ears, as though they were true, while yet they were hollow and false. And they have borne off and taken possession of the suffrage of truth at our hand, and then, no long time afterwards, been discovered to be corrupt and unworthy of credit, and deceitful borrowers of the garb of truth, and have thus too easily exposed us as men who are ridiculously deluded, and who bear their witness inconsiderately to things which ought by no means to have won it. And on the contrary, other things, which are really honorable, and the reverse of impositions, but which have not been expressed in plausible statements, and thus have the appearance of being paradoxical and most incredible, and which have been rejected as false on their own showing, and held up undeservedly to ridicule, have afterwards, on careful investigation and examination, been discovered to be the truest of all things, and wholly incontestable, though for a time spurned and reckoned false. Not simply, then, by dealing with things patent and prominent, which are sometimes delusive and sophistical, but also by teaching us to search into things within us, and to put them all individually to the test, lest any of them should give back a hollow sound, and by instructing us to make sure of these inward things first of all. He trained us to give our assent to outward things only then and thus, and to express our opinion on all these severally. In this way, that capacity of our mind which deals critically with words and reasonings was educated in a rational manner, not according to the judgments of illustrious rhetoricians, whatever Greek or foreign honor appertains to that title, for theirs is a discipline of little value and no necessity. but in accordance with that which is most needful for all, whether Greek or outlandish, whether wise or illiterate. And in fine, not to make a long statement by going over every profession and pursuit separately, in accordance with that which is most indispensable to all men, whatever manner of life they have chosen, if it is indeed the care and interest of all who have to converse on any subject whatever with each other, to be protected against deception. End of part 4.